everyone, welcome to this new episode of Caroline Talks. I am your host, Caroline Heiss, film critic and journalist, and this is the podcast / YouTube channel where I speak to film creatives around the world about their work in the industry and what inspires them. And today, I'm actually very, very happy to be joined by two lovely ladies to talk about freediving. And I think emotional attachment and detachment and how that is actually connected to freediving for in the film, Seven Beats Per Minute, directed by Yuki Kang, starring as her lead subject, Jessie Lu. So Jessie is actually a world-renowned champion freediver, as well as I was looking at your website and I saw there's something called static breath holding, and like versus like basically you stay still for like as long as possible. And I think your record is over 8 minutes. Is that what it is, Jessie? Like, which is
yes,
like
8 minutes and 1 second.
I think the most I've ever been able to hold my breath snorkeling was like 2 minutes. So I can't even imagine it. But not only is she a champion freediver, but Jessie is also a PhD. She has a doctorate in pharmacology, but also pharmacogeneticist, where you basically match people's genetics based. You take medication and match it to their genetics to get the optimal use out of medication.
Yeah. So I'm training in clinical pharmacology and pharmacogenetics. So it involves both the research and development of new therapeutics, as well as how to better use the existing therapeutics, such as using genetic testing results to guide therapy choices in order to increase efficacy and decrease the risk of toxicity.
Interesting. So I guess that's kind of like connected to, I know that when, for instance, like when you have to do like cancer drug therapies, like people usually match up, take the best cancer drugs to match up with like what works best for them. So it's kind of like along the same line.
Yeah. So there are a lot of things that has been developing in the last decade, you know, kind of like term personalized medicine or precision medicine. It's more of like, fine-tuned diagnosis, and then we can treat, you know, the right person with the right drug at the right dose and things like that.
Well, that's very interesting. And it's actually going to be tied into a couple of questions I actually have to ask you about freediving. But first, the film, Seven Beats Per Minute, actually screened at Sundance, and I was not able to see it at Sundance. So when I found out it was screening for Hot Dogs, I was like, yes, I'll finally be able to get to watch it. And also to speak to Yuki and to Jessie. So the film takes place over a number of years and it follows Jessie's career, kind of like almost like a rise and fall, because there was an accident in 2018. But what really fascinates me about this film, Yuki, is how you really give audiences a really in-depth look of what freediving is, because a lot of people might not even know what freediving is if they're not familiar with what I call aquatic athletics. And because like freediving is really a sport really only known in areas where you have, where you can do scuba diving. For instance, like the Caribbean, along the Pacific Islands and in the Hawaiian Islands and those kind of places. And like around I would say, the West Coast of America, right? So the film, I think, really gives audiences a chance to learn what freediving is. And for Jessie, really gives us an insight into the psychological toll a sport like freediving takes on athletes. You know, it's like very physically demanding, but it's emotionally and mentally demanding. And I want to first ask for you, Yuki, like in the film, you start off saying that you learned about Jessie when you started to take an interest in freediving. So talk to me about first learning about freediving for yourself and how you got interested in the sport.
Before I started freediving, I first seen like visuals available on YouTube and on the website. It's just like even just by take a look of all the things that are available, I saw the image was so immersive. It's like the grand nature and the human that really blend into that picture. I really want to feel what it feels like to be freediving. So went into amateur training place in Thailand, and I realized like freediving has that own small communities. There's a lot of people who can only be amateur freedivers, but they spend a long time living in those dive centers and just training in free diving. And initially, there's a really supportive vibe even among people who can only dive like a 50 meter, 20 meters, 30 meters. It seems like each meter is like another person was able to make everybody around them celebrates that. So that was a really surprising, besides what I've learned with the free divings, just in general, how those small communities are stayed very tight and supportive with each other's achievements. And then they are very religiously watching all the competitions are from around the world. And among the Chinese divers, they talk about the figure Jessie, because she's graduated from a kind of equivalent Harvard in Beijing, and at the same time she has a PhD in the US, and she's a free diving athlete. All these things accumulate made Jessie a really interesting people, not only in free diving but in a lot of other parts. Jessie's story gets shared quite a lot. So but when I first learned free diving, I was very quick to discover my limits. I remember one time I dove around 28 meters. The swim up was really tough on my legs, and close to the surface, there was like a huge urge to breathe. It was very hard. And also, by in the 20 meters, 28 meters under the water, there's almost no light. And there's a huge pressure. It feels like a piece of rock crashing my chest. And I just in those moments, I couldn't imagine would I really want to try go down deeper? My answer is no. And I wonder what kind of people, what kind of will take those professional athletes goals 50 meters, 60 meters, over 100 meters deep. It just seems like impossible and wild to me. And I really want to understand that psychology behind that for someone who choose to do this.
Yeah, for me, I'm from the Caribbean, I'm from Barbados. So I've known about free diving for a number of years. And I knew about it because when I was younger, back in my younger days, I wanted to be a marine biologist. So I really wanted to be a marine biologist. And so I used to actually work at an institute, a research institute on the island, run by McGill University. So they did like a lot of research on marine biologists, and sometimes we'd have scuba divers who would stay over as not students. Sometimes it would be students, but sometimes it would be just like people who literally travel around the world to scuba dive in different locations. And some of them were like amateur free divers. And I used to watch shows, like I used to watch a lot of documentaries about people like Jacques Cousteau, you know? And so like I was really enamored with scuba diving and like marine biology and marine life. And I learned about free diving that way. And I used to imagine like if I could be a free diver, would I be able to like hold my breath for that long? And I would go snorkeling, like Mrs. and I would go to the beach every Sunday and we go snorkeling and that kind of stuff. And I test my limits. And like I said, I think the longest I've ever held my breath was like 2 minutes. And I took scuba diving a couple of times. I wanted to get PADI certified, but it's very expensive in the Caribbean to get certified. So I just did it like a couple of times recreationally for my birthday. And like for you, Yuki, like just going like the meters, I went, I think as far down as 20 meters, and the pressure I would feel and the weight just from the scuba tank and like the everything gets darker and you're less like the atmosphere. And that's one of the things that really stood out to me in this film is like, to me, it's really about mind over matter. You know, it's like you really have to conquer your own body mentally to push your limits. You know, I kind of see freediving as an endurance sport. You have to keep pushing and push your limits as far as possible. So for you, Jesse, when you first started this, when you first started freediving, you started it when you were fairly young. And when what was it about freediving that made you say, I wanna, because going from scuba diving to freediving is two very different things. Scuba diving, you have the tanks, you have all of the gear that tells you like how deep you're going, like what your oxygen levels are. And all of that. But once you take off all of the gear and it's just you and your fins, that's it. You know, like what was it about freediving that made you say, I want to drop all of the extra weight, technically, physically, and I think mentally, and say, I'm going to tackle this whole new side of like, I think, human endurance.
Yeah. So coincidentally, I also wanted to be a marine biologist when I was really young. I always dreamed about swimming with fish, but I just didn't know. Didn't even know diving was a thing that I can learn to get certified. I remember in graduate school in the US, I looked up for some marine biology program, thinking maybe I can participate in other ways. And then there was this requirement for scuba certification. At the time, I was like, what was that? Then I looked into it. So I got scuba certified first. Then it kind of reminds me of the time when I was learning swimming when I was young. I always had fun in the water, to play games with friends on the water, on breath hold for a very short amount of time. So I think I always had happy memories from being in the water. So that really helped me during my scuba training. Being in the water, underwater, was a happy place for me. So switching from that to free diving, where I go to breath hold. So mentally, I think it is already a safe kind of mode that has kicked in when I'm on my breath hold. So it's less likely to feel that anxiety, like that fear when you feel you have the urge to breathe. And then the plus of dropping all the weights is that I can swim fast. I can go any direction. I don't have to ascend really slowly. And I also very, there's very little resistance in water. So when you are put your body in a hydrodynamic position, you can glide through the water really fast. So it just becomes sort of like a release from the gravity. So we can like play in the water in this three-dimensional world. You can, do flips, go up and down, and just it's really a liberation feeling. On top of just being really silent and quiet, you already feel quiet when you go scuba diving underwater, when you are not hearing the noise from above the surface. But when you're free diving, you don't even hear the breathing sound, right? So we stop breathing and just the whole world goes into this very still zone, and it's really, for me at least, it's really, really inducive to some kind of deep meditation. I just feel really peaceful every time after a free dive. Always gives me this such a euphoric feeling almost, and I just really loved it. So then I kept going, sort of shifting more from scuba diver to be a free diver.
And I kind of see the similarities in that. And also, actually, I think your career as working in pharmacology, but also as filmmaking, because both of them are kind of like endurance sports, like to keep doing what you're doing to get a PhD, you got to go to school for years and you have to make sure you stay dedicated to this job, to this vocation, this career, and like study it consistently. Like you never really stop studying when you're doing those kind of careers and professions, because like new information is being gleaned every day, like you gotta really lock in and decide you're doing that. And for you, Yuki, as a filmmaker, especially making a documentary like this, it's an endurance sport. You're like, once you decide to do a documentary where you're following Jessie and her career and her life for a number of years, you gotta stick with it. And like, and it does get tiring, because there's I what I thought was really interesting, what I really appreciated about the both of you in this film is how open you are. Not only with your own personal feelings about yourselves, but about each other, and that's something I want us to really talk about, because there's not many documentaries where the directors and documentarians are in the films themselves, and not only are they in the films, but they also interact with the subjects, like with you, Jesse, and like we get to hear like how you as a documentarian feel, how you as a filmmaker feel, but then also as a friend and a confidant for Jesse, we get to see that. And then like, you became her safety spotter, her spotter in the water. Like, you took on all of these multiple roles. But before we get into all of that, I want to talk first about the endurance of filmmaking for you, Yuki, and like deciding I'm gonna pursue Jesse and make a film about her life, and say I'm gonna stick with this for the long haul, however many years it's going to be.
I think when we first started, we both imagined it would be like 1 year journey following Jesse's competition cycle. And COVID happened and everything else, and We both left where we were staying, and Jesse kind of stationed in Hawaii for a bit, and I was in Canada, not having a home for a while. So I think with the nature of documentary, just so hard to know when the story ends. So there's a little bit of that, but for me, initially when I was really excited to pursue a career in documentaries, the possibility to open doors to lives that I wouldn't have witnessed, experienced otherwise, because I only have this one life and this limited amount of time to live life as my own. And I'm just so curious with the world, with other people, and I always wanna to know more, to know other situations and how the other people dealt with with things. And it's a sort of a, goes by nurturing my own quest and my own growth experience. So it was really that for me to choose in documentary. So there's a lot of passion driven behind. It is really hard a lot of times, but because I think I feel really alive, and it gives me, my life a sense of meaning. That's why I feel like it never gets tiring for me in that.
And for you, Yuki, like I mentioned, I'm sorry, for you, Jesse, like I mentioned, like pursuing the career that you're pursuing is like an endurance sport itself. Do you think that's actually tied into why you pursued free diving? Like that's in your nature to like push your own limits and test, keep testing yourself over and over, because free diving, even as a as professional as you are, even with all of the accolades and the awards you've won and the competitions you've won, you're still learning about yourself as a free diver. Each dive is teaching you something about yourself and about your own limitations, but I think it's also teaching about nature, you know, like you like every time you dive, the situation is different. The environment is different because weather is unpredictable. The ocean is unpredictable. So, like, do you think that doing what you do as both as a free diver and as and a PhD is really tied into your nature and like something within you that you just like, I want to keep testing myself?
Wow, yeah, you really ask very insightful questions.
Oh, thank you.
So, yeah, so one thing about free diving definitely connects with my sort of personality, how I, enjoy doing things. My grandma used to say, when I was really young, maybe 3, 4 years old, I would be playing something, toy, for a very, very long time. I just wouldn't give it away. I just keep going on and on and on. I think that curiosity always comes with me, that I really wanted to fully go through something. I don't want to stop. I always have this sort of momentum that keeps wanting to see the end, that curiosity. So when I work, when I learn something, I really want to see it through. And in life, I believe there are many things that kind of holds us back. There are times where you have to wait. You know, there are certain procedures that needs to be done before you can do X, Y, and Z. So that always kind of takes a little bit of fire and passion out of me when I get put on a sort of hold. And for a long times for good reasons that I should wait. But free diving is one of those experiments where you don't really need to, get complicated permissions for. And then you implement what you learned best, you implement your safety system, and then you're free to explore. You've got someone 100% dedicated, focused on protecting your life. In itself, that's already amazing. How many chances do we have in life to have someone there fully supporting you, and you're allowed to explore your limits in some way, right? In free diving, it is your physical and mental limits, how long you can stay conscious on a breath hold. So for me, that was a fun experiment every time. So it was, for me, it was kind of like satisfying my curiosity as well when I experiment with it, just kind of become an observer of my body and just to see what my body can do. And yeah, so. And I really also had fun out of this too. And on a different day, right? So not every day we've got perfect condition, and not every day you feel you're well rested. Not every day you are in the best mood. So there's a lot of these factors that come to play together that can influence the performance on a particular day. So, and in itself, it changes too. So it's not just a repetition over and over again. So it's a chance for me to really learn how I respond to these different elements, right? And how my body responds to these different elements, including the emotion, right? So how we feel, where my mind is at really impacts how long my breath hold is and how that breath hold journey feels like. You know, is it feeling more of a struggle or is the feeling really pleasant? And I get to learn a lot about myself. And that's what I like too. So learning, you know, doing something, experimenting, but also learning. So overall, I think that's kind of, for me, it's a lucky draw that I got, you know, sort of got into this freediving sport.
Yeah, because I think free diving, as I was watching the film, because it was something that had never occurred to me before, but when I was watching the film, I think what occurred to me is that I think it's the loneliest sport there probably is that humans do. You know, in other sports and in other activities, recreation activities, most of them are team efforts. You know, like I think I'm trying to remember if there's an I was trying to remember, is there another sport where it's just you? And technically tennis. It's kind of the only sport because once the tennis player is out on the court, they don't have a coach with them. They don't have anyone telling them what to do. Like every decision they make on the court is just them. You know, they have to read the game and read their opponent. But even as a free diver, you don't even have an opponent. It's literally just you and the ocean, and it's you and your body, you know, and you don't have anyone to give you any feedback. And you have your safety divers, but your safety divers are. Oh, external, you know, they're still a specific distance away because they can't interrupt you and distract you because to distract you is like potentially risking your life. So like it's such an incredibly isolating sport, you know, activity. Like, and I think to me, apart from having to hold your breath for so long, that would probably be the thing that would unnerve me the most is the isolation. You know, and there's the isolation and the coldness. The ocean is so, the deeper you go, the colder it gets, you know, and the darker it gets. And me being a slight claustrophobic, I'm like, I already know, like, I probably never ever do free diving past a certain limit because that's just not in me. But I wanted to ask both of you about what is it about the isolation of it that draws you to? Because I know that in the narration, like, there's a lot that's really interesting things that's said in the film, in the narration. And one of them is, oops, my phone is about to fall down. And one of them is like, for you, Jesse, you saw it as therapeutic. You know, you see it as a way that you mentioned yourself, it's a way to really get to know yourself. And I think in the very beginning of the film, there's something that I thought was interesting where you likened it to a baby in the womb. You know, like, because we as humans, we start our lives in water. You know, as we age, we lose the capacity and the ability to hold our breath. We lose our ability to feel natural in the water. We lose our ability to swim because babies are actually born knowing how to swim. You know, they're born knowing how to hold their breath. And it's only when they're made to cry that they learn how to let it out. And so I thought like the film kind of made an interesting comparison between being in the womb and then also being in the ocean. And like, when we're outside of that habitat that we struggle the most. You know, it was like when we're out of the water is when life is like confusing and it's stressful and makes us cry and makes us want to get back into the isolation. So I want both of you to talk about the parallel the film makes between solitude being isolating, but also solitude being relaxing and feeling comforting. And for you, Yuki, I want you to go first because as a filmmaker, you're observing Jesse in this environment. And as someone with experience in free diving, you understand it intimately. And I think having that experience as a free diver yourself really gives the film a perspective that I think a filmmaker who doesn't have that experience wouldn't provide. You know, so I want you to talk about being able to understand Jessie from having that experience and understanding her need for the isolation and being drawn to it.
I think also I'm more and more following Jesse into year three or four, and being at those competition sites, seeing like every other athlete to go on their quest. What I understand is freediving is really that physically and not only like metaphorically you're going to a deep dive with yourself, it's you actually being physically immersed into that environment. There's no other being but your own heartbeat and your own ability taking you down and taking you back on. And what's at stake is their lives, because if anything happened down deep, you're really at a big risk to, lose your life over this attempt. And it really is a deep dive and look into the athlete's each individual deepest fear. And it's really come back with those fears and really, I think, have a full grasp and understanding of oneself. And I think, one other athlete said, the ocean really reflects back to what you are and who you are and what challenges you're going through. And that's a big part for me. I feel like for Jesse and a lot of divers who choose to go freediving in beyond a lot of limitations, it's really that self-exploration, which is always like taking in isolations and the solitude. That's when you really take the look at your own soul.
And for you, Jesse, like, what is it about the solitude that really speaks to you in particular? Because watching the film, I noticed that you're also alone a lot. There's a lot of shots where you are off to the side by yourself, like you, like at the competitions, like during the after the awards ceremony when people are celebrating and everything, you're usually this is just what was in the film, but you're usually off to your side, you're observing everyone, and you're just like really in your head a lot. And I kind of saw it as an interesting juxtaposition where you're more comfortable alone in the water than you are a lot outside. When you're outside and you're alone, you look almost uneasy, but you're just like, I want to be there, but I don't know how to get there. And so talk to me about that, because I thought it was interesting, just an interesting observation that the film gives us about you and like how you see the ocean, but how you also see land as well, like how you see like these two sides of you.
Yeah, totally. So what I learned, one thing from freediving is in any given moment, we really only have one thought in the head, right? We may have multiple thoughts or multiple competing thoughts even, but they only like come one at a time, right? So you can switch between different thoughts in a given period, but at every single moment, there's only just one thought. If one can manage what thought exists in the brain, like what thought flows through, one can really change the experience that you're going through in the moment. So, and freediving really also got me thinking about this about myself and observing other people. I also teach a lot of people to freedive and hold their breath. I see a wide spectrum of people's reactions when they're in the water, from very nervous, afraid, but really still wanting to kind of overcome this fear to that's so comfortable. Feel like just back home. It's like you said, it's way more comfortable than being on land, perhaps. So for me, I think I was just naturally enjoying water, perhaps from early memories. It was, maybe more deposits of happy sort of reflexes or like reactions in my mind where water brings me to this happy feeling. And then there are certain thoughts associated with it. And when I'm in the water, I just melt into this very happy mood, right? But then the later on, I just kind of see this is something that we can all train for, how our mental experience, our thoughts. And that's why in the film, I also kind of mentioned there's not a fear that cannot be overcome. So from freediving, I started experimenting on myself, on the things that I really couldn't like stand before, things I don't feel like I can tolerate, or things I'm afraid of, right? Just from like very small things, little bit like trying out and see if that actually is the case. And then having some small successes, it really also afterwards gives me more confidence in this theory and in my approach in life. And then I want to reshape my own life. Then perhaps, I spent a lot of time in isolation when I was young, either physically or mentally. So I was probably kept dealing with my own thoughts, trying to just be happy alone. Then I was able to shape my mind in that direction. But hey, it's the same way if I can shape my mind in the other direction. If I want to feel really comfortable socially or in a crowd, which probably will take time and efforts, but it is doable. So that sort of journey and learning gives me this kind of understanding about myself. And then I feel it's a freedom that I gain to be able to choose who I want to become, what kind of life I really want. And I think, it's a very cool sort of a thing that, we have time in life, and then we can do these kind of experiments that I call it experiments, but it's really also just the journey we choose to take part on. It just feels like who I want to become becomes possible. And then it's also fun, when I try different things and when I see progress, it's really interesting. And that you're right, as I do think that I spend a lot of time in my head, probably too much. So overthinking a lot of times. And when I'm actually sort of in the motion, when I'm doing things, it feels much better. It doesn't matter if I'm doing things by myself, if I'm doing things with other people as a teamwork, working on something where it comes as very clear sort of path that you can see in the near, in a time that's immediately following your action, the next action, when it's really clear, you're not thinking so much, it should feel really good, right? So when I'm just observing and contemplating and thinking a lot, when I'm just sitting still, just doing a lot of thinking, it actually doesn't feel good. And it's not, and it's not perhaps even not the most productive way to spend the time. Some, healthy dose of reflection and deep thinking and just being really quiet is really good. But of course, doing too much of that is, I believe personally, is not the best way to spend my time.
You don't want to get lost in your head too much because, like, for me, I'm an over I can't overthink sometimes. Like, I just get too lost in my head and then I start to spiral, and then it's hard to get myself out of the spiral. And it's just like it can seem like the spiral itself can almost seem comforting, because if I sometimes I think, oh, I'm being active, I'm thinking, and I'm really trying to figure out solutions and things, so it's different problems, but then it's just like I get looped into this and I'm just like I can't get myself out, and then something has to happen for me to like really snap myself out of it. And I really wanted to ask you, because you said it also in the narration of the film, you just said it, like free diving for you is like it's kind of like your happy place, you know, like this is where you feel really content. And there's a line in the narration in the film where you said like everything boils down to it just narrows into a pinpoint, you know, and it's kind of like and like this is just all you focus on. And because this is a place of contentment for you, how do you stop yourself from just letting go in the moment and just like drifting? And I ask that because, as I mentioned, like it's the most solitary sport possible, and you don't have anyone to draw you out of it. You know, like if for instance, if an athlete is on the court, again using the instance of like a tennis player, they at least have like the other opponent, if something happens, that can rush in and help them. You know, they have like a referee that can rush in and help them. And like I mentioned, the safety divers are there, but at a distance, you know. But for you, but for like someone who like where like your consciousness kind of like just narrows into this one particular pinpoint, how do you make sure that you don't lose yourself in that? You know, that you, because it's such a thing where you have to make, I think it's like you have to make sure that you stay extra conscious, you know, because you're, and it's not only about maintaining your oxygen levels and making sure you don't expend more than you have to with each movement, but it's just like I think I can imagine it as almost like I've had general surgery 4 times, so I've gone under general anesthesia, and general anesthesia is kind of the same way where I kind of had the same feeling when it was scuba diving, where it's just like everything just starts to narrow in, and like the doctors tell you, okay, just let go, and that's how you really get into the anesthesia, and you just like pass out. And I kind of saw like free diving is kind of this has the same similar threat where you could just like if you just relax a bit, just too much, you could all just let you can just let it go. So how do you make sure that you don't, that you stay just conscious enough that you achieve your goal, but you also just don't, like, in a sense, drift away?
So I think that varies quite a lot from person to person. That there is not like this general rule of thumb to say this is when this is when you have to like stop when you feel this way or that, right? Everybody's body is perhaps a little different, and how they perceive those sensations are also different. We get an urge to breathe. Maybe for someone that's totally fine, they don't get, flustered at all. But for some people, they're already really anxious when they feel that. And that chemistry definitely does play a part in if someone can stay conscious or not towards the end of the dive. So it's not the same where, when oxygen saturation in your blood drops to a certain percentage, let's say 66%, then that's the line where we lose consciousness. It's not like that. It's very different from person to person, and how you experienced, and then all the other chemicals in the brain, whether it's stress hormones or whether it's the happy chemicals, dopamine, serotonin, they all have this complicated network to kind of, collectively determine if we can stay conscious, focused or not. And it is an extreme case in free diving for like very long breath hold, to kind of test your limit in that way or experiment in that way. But what I would say is that extreme stuff is probably not for everybody, but just the kind of understanding how you feel and explore it in small steps is a really, really cool thing that I think everybody should try and kind of, get just a little bit of sense and understanding of how cool your body and your mind is. And then the reason I say it is there are right way of doing it and then the wrong way of doing it, right? And it's very important. As you said, safety divers are far away. It seems like there's nothing they can do. In real world, when we learn free diving or when we do free diving competitions in a properly organized sort of like sanctioned by certain, agency or government. Governance where there's proper safety rules. Over the years, a lot of these procedures have been put in place where the safety team can sort of interrupt the dive. They can assist the diver to come back to surface in faster if they see something is wrong. So there is an extra set of eyes on that person in those safe and controlled environment. But for the diver themselves, the experiment should also just be taken in very small baby steps. It's not like I just did my 2 minute breath hold and tomorrow I'm gonna try 6 minutes, right? So it's not like that. It's just we have somebody who has gone through it. For example, the instructor who knows what's likely to happen if you take 5 more seconds breath hold. How your body is reacting, how you're feeling. They see and they can tell you. And then it's kind of like just like learning from teacher, a master. You have to let go. You have to let it go in order to absorb the new knowledge and new experience. If you stick onto what you know, you'll never grow out of your own knowledge and experience, right? So you have to trust the other person and to be able to go a little bit further. But then you observe and then you remember. And then you analyze, or perhaps you integrate it into your own sort of scope of knowledge. And I really like that part. So when I was learning free diving, I had a really amazing teacher from Performance Free Diving International, and I was really allowing myself to kind of give them control of my life, let them just tell me what I should be doing. For me, it was a really great experience. And for the competition dives, we also have rules where the divers, they can announce perhaps less than 3 meters more than their personal best in the last couple of months, as in saying you can only make progressively deeper dives. You cannot do big jumps as a safety precaution. So I think that, just being able to let go a little bit and just let other people tell you what to do is how we kind of learn better. But make sure it is in good hands, in a safe and controlled environment.
Yeah, it's about trust in yourself and also trust in the environment and the people around you. And Yuki, as the director and the observer, and I think also it's like a subject within the film. How did you balance all of this? Like you're balancing your trust in yourself as Yuki and also as someone who knows Jesse, but also you have to balance being the filmmaker and also being like the point in time where you actually became Jesse's safety diver as well. Like that was a lot for you to handle, you know. Like Jesse just has to prepare herself for the competitions, you know, prepare herself for the next step and progressing and going forward. Whereas you have all of these different plates that you're balancing, you know, you're doing all of this. Like, what was it like for you in like learning how to balance in the trust in yourself and in filmmaker, and then also in trusting in Jesse?
I feel like even looking back, the process was really like a journey. We're learning as it goes, and the hardest part for me is to learn to let go. I think the years it's really following Jesse and witnessing freedivings is really for me to letting it go. Like with a lot of my own struggles and letting it go as a creatively as a director, there's a certain vision that I came into the project that I want to achieve, and there's a certain story that I want to tell, and there's also certain rule I set within myself that I want to remain as a passive absorber rather than being active into a life that I'm following. All these rules and expectations, at some point, I felt like I was really just fighting with myself to let it go and submit myself to the possibility that life can take us and Jesse's journeys can take me to understand really the privilege to be able to walk in somebody's shoes almost and to tell their stories. So that was the biggest part for me. And I think in terms of balancing, it also comes with just the rules that I'm setting within myself that's hard to break. And a lot of times that I find struggles in between, whether should I interfere or should I not interfere. And but I think like towards the end, as we're in the vertical blue, it really like start to really we understand the balance of I'm following Jesse and the impact that I could create in Jesse's life, and also into the story what that meant for the both of us as a spiritual journey as well, to find that kind of balance all come together at the end of the film.
The thing that always fascinates me with documentaries in particular, especially documentaries about people in particular, is that we're as come this is coming from myself as the audience, we're expected to watch this whole sequence of events unfold and not think that the documentarian is going to step in. You know, like they're supposed to watch it as it just happens, you know, observe the person's life. And it kind of made me think, so like, I know, like, for National Geographic and like a whole bunch of other professional nature documentarians, like, if they see something happen in nature, they're not supposed to interrupt, you know, because this is like the circle of life. And this is how things are. This is how it would happen if you were in here. So you're not supposed to interfere. But then I've always had an issue with that. I'm always just like, but if you are there, like, if you can step in, you know, help. You know, and in making films about people, it's kind of almost the same thing, you know, where you talk, as you're saying, like, you want to be a passive observer. You don't want your influence as a filmmaker to influence Jesse's actions or her decisions, like the course of things that she's gonna do, because like this is her life you're talking about, you know, like it's not only just doing the free diving, but it's all the decisions that you make leading up to each competition, you know, like everything that happens is gonna have a chain reaction, you know, like every action has an equal and opposite reaction. And you, as a filmmaker, you're telling yourself, I don't want to dictate turns because I kind of like influencing how the story is going to turn out, you know? So, and then there's like what happens in 2018 where like you have the accident, Jesse, and I was thinking, oh my gosh, like how hard is that for not just for you, but then also all the people around you. And then for Yuki, you as a filmmaker, you're just like, I'm here as an observer. What do I do? You know, and like it creates this tension because, and I thought it was really important that you included that in the film and that you this is really where you step in because we got to know your mindset at that particular point in time and like how this is all taking a toll on you as well because you want to be there for her, but you as the filmmaker are telling yourself because you have these own rules that you set up for yourself, it's like I don't want to be interfering, I want to be passive. And like, what was it like for you with that struggle, especially with what happened in 2018 and you and making the decision to become her safety diver? Because it was just like I was not expecting that at all. That's kind of like what you would call as plot twist. You know, when it says in film, you're like, and I'll become her safety diver. It's like, what? So talk to me about that decision.
I think it initially was just a talks like I will be there and I'm a free diver and Jesse it's always performs best when there's a consistent diving partners. It would it potentially be me or a friend of Jesse, and I just felt like if I potentially will like take a role in part of sifting in Jesse, I should first take the lessons. And Jessie recommend me her coach from
It was the
Performance
same.
Freediving.
It was the same coach that you had originally. Okay.
Yes, and I had the privilege to learn freediving and specialized in safety in that course to really understand what it takes as a safety diver. So it kind of naturally progressed when we're in Vertical Blue that I become the most like a reasonable person to safety Jessie's dives, and I forgot your question, sorry.
So what was it like for you to where you got to that point where you realized you couldn't be passive anymore? You know, where you're like, I'm part of this story now. Like I can't be just a cat an observer with my camera. You're just like, I have to be here because you can't because to be absent, I think like for I this is just me, Jesse. This is just my thought. I was just thinking like I could imagine like in that situation remaining passive. You know, and that's like where I kind of made the comparison between like nature documentarians where they're like, if nature happens, like you're not supposed to step in, you can't. But I'm like, this is like, you can't not step in, you know, like you have to kind of be there for her in that instance. And I think you needed to be there for yourself too, because if you hadn't, it would have changed the film completely, you know, everything about the film. If that would have been, even if the film would have been completed, because had it not happened, like the story could have, change, you know, like a different reaction could have been come out of if you hadn't changed, if you had made a different decision.
I think like now really like looking back to try to understand this journey, what it meant. I felt like I chose to be a documentary storyteller initially because there was a comfort to stay behind the camera as a passive absorber of somebody's life. It feels like I'm in some part of experiencing their lives as well, but I'm not taking any potential risk. My emotions always stay the safety behind the cameras. And that goes to like understanding like my own experience with a lot of early childhood traumas. I always felt a sense of like safety in isolation and in one step removed from life experiences. And that really put into test with going through this journey with Jesse. It feels like I have to take the step forward to really connect with Jesse and really take an active part of the experiences that we're sharing together. It's not even just like being the director in there. It's just as our personal journey, it's challenging to go break our own shells in that sense. But I felt it wasn't like I had that like solution to the situation, but it was really just like I felt like with every circumstances that pushing me to be taking that step forward to not just stay in that isolations and being the passive absorber that I used to be comfortable being, and it gave me a lot of more freedoms once I took that step forward, and then also hold me accountable for what happens in Jesse's life and what goes beyond when the film production wraps. Really, like I felt it was like one of the most profound experience that I've had. It's the step forward to connect with other individuals, with other humans. It wasn't something I feel like I've ever experienced, and it gave me like a eyes open to see experience around me in a much like a depth dimensions from the before the experience, and it became a huge immersive like healing experience, not only for me, I think. Even like I remember with like my editors and the crews, we worked in the film for numbers of years, and everyone started to sharing things, and it become like a collective experience, finding a lot of healings through making the film.
And for you, Jesse, like what was it like for you? Because I mentioned the Ask Me in 2018, and this is like a huge change, turn in the film, because this is again, this is like not only from Yuki's perspective as a more passive observer, but like even for me as someone watching it, I kind of saw that as like where as I mentioned, the free diving is a mind over matter sport, you know, it's all about you being making sure that you're very in control, and you know your body. And as you were there, there's the sequences where you're on the boat, and like the safety team is like resuscitating you. And I'll tell you, I was very anxious. I was very stressed. And what was stressful to me is like when you came back, and you were talking, and you were going back to Dean's Hole, which is where Vertical Blue is housed. You again, we're testing your limits again. You're like, I'm gonna go back, you know, I'm gonna conquer this fear. And I understood that so well, because you're like, I can't let this fear dictate my life, you know, I can't let this incident change the course of my life and take away something that I love so much. You know, I have to conquer that fear. And you did it more than once. You had to go back. And I wanted to ask you, like, what was it like for you going through that experience and knowing that it was being documented, you know? And that and I asked that because, as I mentioned, the sport is very isolating, but without this documentary, people outside of the free diving community wouldn't know that it happened, because again, it's just such a very small community, you know? And like this is only known by you and the people in that community, and like your friends and family on the outside. But without this film, no one would know that that happened to you. Like people would call it like a near-death experience. And we see you going through that. And we see you fighting and struggling and going back. And it's being documented. What was it like for you to have that be documented?
Yeah, so Dean's Blue Hole in the Bahamas, it's a very special place. And super, like, I was super grateful that Yuki stepped in to be my safety over there. It's so isolated, it's so remote, and it's so expensive for freedivers to travel to. So I went there first time in 2016, and that's kind of a place where it's the opposite of my previous freediving experience, where I felt supported by safety diver. In Dean's Blue Hole, in my first trip, I felt really isolated. I couldn't even find people to schedule a training dive with me. And then diving alone is absolutely a no-no, and it's very dangerous. So, and it was shocking to me that from that point on, I think Dean's Blue Hole started to deposit certain sense of loneliness in my heart. And then when I was still kind of a newbie to the scene, I was very young, sort of like beginner competitive freediver in 2016. It was only 1 year after I started diving competitively, and 1 year and a half, a little bit over 1 year and a half since I started freediving. And somehow I found myself in the world's most prestigious, deepest freediving competition, and all of that, just from complicated reasons. And then it was a place where I really felt out of sort of like out of my comfort zone, and it was intimidating, and I was not feeling I was competent, and it was kind of sort of not connected with the other divers. Plus, hard to find safety divers to train with me. So, all of this perhaps was my demon, and it was the place that becomes the fear, that specific physical location. The incident itself in 2018, never anywhere in my mind, even in the remotest imagination, that a blackout would happen on that dive, because I had problems equalizing before the event, and I had many early turns, and I've never really struggled with blackouts in the ocean, because I kind of, dive with my comfort feeling. If something feels wrong, I turn around. So, but afterwards, when I was rescued, and then it kind of finally, like, kind of starts to make me realize what happened. The event was on live stream anyways at the time. It was on YouTube live. So, but after it happened, it just becomes a reality. And I started actually feel like very complicated emotion for the first 24 hours. But really after that, I had probably my happiest year since that event. Because I think there's something that kind of got unblocked in my sort of in my train of thoughts, how to process this event. Perhaps I think, we're always afraid of failure in public, right? So if this is my profession, this is what I'm good at, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, and if I like really do poorly in public, and that fear is kind of an enemy in the way. But once you actually have failed miserably in public and afterwards, that fear is gone.
You're like nothing
So,
about it. You're like nothing. You're like the worst
right?
has literally happened.
Yeah. So, and that fear is gone. So that's one reason, perhaps. And then, I would always kind of come back to what I learned in the beginning in freediving was like certain emotion is perhaps my worst enemy. It kind of really holds me back. It's limiting my potential, and it's sort of decreasing the quality of my experience in life. So that's still in the same kind of sort of data that I'm collecting sort of throughout my whole freediving experiment about learning about myself. So that was a sort of additional data point I've got. And the other reason I really, feel that even watching the film afterwards, looking back on that experience, talking about it, it does not like feel anywhere heavy or negative in my mind. Because when I was out, the people that are stressed are my safety divers, the judges, and the people that are watching. I was in a very happy place when I was unconscious. So when I was out of my body, it was another deep, deep meditation, because I'm not getting any sensory input from my body. I don't see, I don't hear, I don't feel, but my consciousness is there. I'm thinking. It's a very warm and comfortable and safe and kind of peaceful sensation with very clear analytical processing in my mind. It was crystal clear processing. I almost immediately kind of felt like I was thinking about this person whose name is Jessie and her body, kind of from a outside point of view, kind of like out body experience. I had really positive memories from that, 3.5 minutes when people were rescuing me, actually. But then I just really realized that I need to come back to tell them I'm okay, right? Because I can't then start to hear things when the sensory starts to come back. When I sort of feel like the air pressure come building up in my chest because people are pumping a lot of air in my lungs, then I really started to have this sort of desire. I really wanted to come around, tell people like, okay, I'm okay, don't worry, everything's cool. So I didn't have any like negative sort of memories from that blackout on its own. I did feel bad about not making the dive after like perhaps a whole year of hard training and preparing for the event, and who knows when I'll fully recover and be able to do those dives again. So that kind of time lost and sort of not feeling that there was something to kind of gain out of all that effort sort of in that short time after that was hard. But then I realized there was a lot of other things I gained from the experiment, so it kind of just balanced out overall. And I think that's why afterwards, after that event, I really appreciate a lot more about my sensories. So what I can see, what I can hear, what I can smell, because I've had the experience of the contrast where you don't feel anything to then you feel it. So, and I think we sometimes take this for granted and we don't appreciate it, but if you actually had the reference point, then every day is amazing and I'm just in a much happier mood. So I was really actually grateful for the whole experience. But at the same time, I feel bad for putting other people under stress, like they have to rescue someone. And then, of course, after that, I had taken freediving a lot more, cautiously with my approach. I've never had a blackout after that ever. Because before, I think, before 2018, I was, training harder sometimes in the swimming pool, would hold my breath for statics, reaching a point where I was really hypoxic or like on the verge of blackout. And then safety diver needs to help me to make sure that I survive, right? But after that event, I've never had to put my body anywhere close to that limit. I was just, still having like deep dives, training for it. In 2019, I made my first and the only world record. So everything kind of comes in a more like smooth, easier and happier way. And I feel this is how it should be. So and I'm still training, but taking a lot more safety precaution, I would
More
say.
cautious now, and funny thing is, like what you were describing about the euphoria and everything, it's kind of like what I was asking when I what I asked before about like making sure that you don't let go, be with getting trapped in the feeling of the euphoria when you dive. So it's kind of like hearing you say the same thing, like when you were unconscious for the 3.5 minutes was the exact same almost sensation, of like being like I'm happy here, like I'm like, again, you're like being in the ocean, like instead of being in the ocean as it happened while you were being resuscitated. So I was just thinking in my head, I'm like, life is so funny, but it's also the human body is so, it's so funny. It shows like the capabilities that the human body has, like in very extreme situations, the human body has a way of preserving and protecting itself, which I guess in a way is tied back to talking about how we started in the womb, and like we started in like extreme circumstances, and we learned to adapt. And one of the things that for both of that, I think both of you revealed in the film that I wasn't expecting is how it all kind of came down to like the mental block you were having kind of came down to like your childhood and like the feelings you had about your childhood, and like you in the film you say like you in like the year afterwards when you were training, but you also like really thinking about who you were and like what was it that was blocking you mentally, you kind of took it back to your childhood. And I was not expecting that at all, where you were saying the thing that's really blocking me and that could have affected me while I was on this dive is my emotional state, and I wasn't expecting that. And I'll ask you about it, Jessica, because I have a question about that. But for you, Yuki, seeing Jessie go through all of this, and following her through the year of like where she's saying, I'm going to be more cautious, but I'm going to go back out there. I'm going to conquer my fear. I'm going to test my fear. I'm going to test myself. And then in doing that, also come into the relationship to say, wait, I have some family issues that I need to sort out. What was it like for you watching Jesse go through that process, and how did that affect you yourself as a filmmaker and seeing, she's tested her fear, she's gone through her fear, she's tested her fear, and she's come to a realization about what could be her fear. But like, what was it like for you as watching her to go through that and also coming to that revelation? Because I was not expecting the film to go there at all. I was not expecting Jesse to come and say, yeah, I got family issues.
I think like when Jessie first revealed to me the stories of her childhood, I was really surprised, but at the same time it was really familiar to my ears. It's not an experience that I didn't personally like felt shocking or didn't know, but it was very profound for somebody to be able to say that out loud. At that point, when I first met Jesse and learned all this, I wasn't in a place where comfortable to come to term with even talking about this. And it comes with like our culture in a like an Asian household. Parents are like people who raise you, gave life to you. They're in the pedestal. No matter what happened, it's kind of custom to be in a way that we don't, talk back about those experiences and being ungrateful. So when Jesse started sharing it for me, it opened the door for me to be able to relate to Jesse in a person's to person's way. And ultimately, I think making the film and following Jesse for the number of the years, it became a deep dive for myself as well. I felt, looking into Jesse's story, it's almost become a mirror reflection that reflects the similarities in our stories. And it really made me even understanding becoming her safety. It's not just that I'm helping Jesse to save the Jesse. It's really I'm aiding for myself as well. It became a very enticing journey, and I just like felt Jessie's bravery to come to terms with her childhood experiences and be able to say it out loud was something very profound from our cultural backgrounds.
And oh, so one of the last things I do want to ask you, Jesse, is about mental health, because I think we've talked about mind over matter, we've talked about endurance, we've talked about loneliness and isolation, but I think something else that I think is really highlighted in the film, even though it's not said explicitly, is mental health and the importance of mental health, and how mental health is important in making sure we don't lose ourselves and that we don't use things as a distraction and ways, methods of running away from things that are affecting us, whether it be trauma, physical or mental or emotional, or whether it's fear or things that we don't use these things that we get into to distract ourselves. Like for you, like the while you find solace in free diving, you have to make sure that it didn't become a way for you to run away from your problems, that you didn't use it as a distraction, because that could end up corrupting it, where you lose the passion for it, where you lose the love, and it becomes more of a chore, and so in doing that, you have to make sure that you confront yourselves, like as Yuki was saying, that she like watching you like confront that. But I think it's also making sure that you protect yourself mentally, because you have to be physically fit to do what it is you want to do, but you also have to be mentally fit. And while the film was going on, I thought I cried in my head. I was like, did she go to therapy? I'm like, because and it was like, because suffering is I think, a significant event, and then coming to the realization that it is tied to how you were feeling emotionally and things to your past. I was wondering, I'm like, did she go to therapy and all of this time while you were testing yourself? But then it also made me think, like, how we have to make sure we don't run away from our problems, and we don't use the things that we love as ways to distract and run away, because that could end up just like you're left with nothing to love. So talk to me about that aspect of not only the film, but like the revelation that you had after the accident, and how you made sure that you didn't use free diving as your method of running away from like your from the revelation that you had?
Yeah, mental health is such important thing. From my culture previously, probably not as well sort of acknowledged, or it's people are not as much aware of it, or there was not as accessible as nowadays, the solutions or help. And I do think that there's some kind of shame that comes with it from my culture, where people try to not talk about it or not like even think about it. And it is, like physical health, right? If we want to stay healthy, we need fresh food. We need sunlight, we need clean water, we need exercise, we need a lot of these external inputs to be fit physically. And mental health is the same. I think it's really hard to be in a silo and then self-build a fortress and be healthy on your own. So and there are many, many ways externally to help with that regard. I mean, free diving for me being one of the things that I can do to help myself. And I would say that, it's always kind of like something I wanted to talk about with friends, since probably like maybe after I turned 16 or 18, sorry, yes, 16 or 18, just before college or like right after college. It becomes a topic that I really wanted to share with friends. And my sort of best friend from college, she was really interested in this topic as well. And then she eventually changed her major to study psychology, and then became a clinical psychologist. And so we always talk about it a lot before as well. And I think hope is important for one. It's like you have to believe in something before you have this willingness to even do something about it, right? So I think part of the hope comes from time. So when I was struggling as a young child about, how am I going to go through life? What's the purpose? Why is this so miserable? Or et cetera, all these bad feelings and thoughts that comes, hitting me like waves in the ocean. I think one of the hope I always grasp onto is that I have time to figure it out. I still have time to figure it out. So, and then that other than hope, and then I think the second thing is to have faith in oneself is important. It's not all about just hoping for something externally to heal us or fulfill us, to complete us. I think it definitely requires this level of faith in yourself. Breath hold, as an example, I always kind of share with my student, is every healthy adult should comfortably hold their breath like 3 to 5 minutes with some training, with some tips, right? Your body can do it. You just have to believe it, that your body can do it. So like, it's like, if you believe it can do it, you can do it on the same day. But if you don't believe it, you'll stop. You'll stop before your body reaches that potential, right? So it's just a matter of how you think about it. And that's the faith. And the same thing with faith with your mind too. I think the mind is very elastic. It has so much capability to rebuild synapses and how you react to certain things. I was super afraid of winter because I had some problem with my hands in the winter. I had these chilblains and inflammations. I ran away from winter all the time, all my life, until I started to believing it. I started believing it, and then now I'm in a different place. I have different age, I have different living circumstances, and I can actually live comfortably in winter. And then I started experimenting it, and then eventually now I'm very happy with winter, and I even went to diving Antarctic. So. And that's a faith in how your mind can shape and then to, enjoy different things and feel healthier. Those are two of the like my sort of most important elements, I would say, in mental health. And then all the additional things with family support, friends, community, and hobby, things you like, and finding your niche, what you're good at, and like really acknowledging your strength, being able to shine and bring value to the society, all of that, you know, collectively, they all help. But I think we don't always get what we want.
I watched a video on your YouTube on your channel where you did the dive in Antarctica, and it was like I could never. I'm from the Caribbean. I grew to love winter. Like winter is actually one of my favorite seasons now, providing it's not gray and dreary for the entire time because of seasonal depression. But I love the snow. You know, I love being able to put on the layers and stuff. And for you, Yuki, my last question is for you. Like, having done the film, gone through this entire process and watching Jessie like find herself, you know, and push past her limits and like also learn how to reconnect with certain parts of herself and confronting like the things that created blockages for her. What has the experience been like for you, Yuki? Like, especially going on, like you said, you weren't expecting it to last as long as it did, partially because of COVID, you know, you had to learn how to, I guess you would say, recalibrate yourself as a filmmaker and like be adaptable and be adjustable. But what has been your biggest takeaway watching Jesse, you know, like, and what making the film, releasing it and having being able to sit back and watch it and like reflect on it, you know, you've had time now and to say like, you know, this is something I wasn't expecting, but like this is one of the biggest payoffs about it for you.
I think the biggest part unexpected for me is the journey of self-realization. I felt I was always self-assured and understand who I am, but actually going through this journey with Jesse, I've never realized there's another like steps in human connections. Be connecting with Jesse this way, it feels like we're families that we're creating outside of our homes. And to be able to do that, I feel like just like the self-realization, and after the fact of the film, I started to see therapists first time in since my childhood. Once I rejected, like to be open to that process, to really like dive into like what past can impact our presence, and to just like to be able to share with people who come from like the same kind of experience, to relate in that way. It's just that something when I started the project, I thought I was making a film about freediving in the ocean. And now it's become a film to connect. And that's something I've not expected. And I feel like it's a gift from life and a gift that Jesse and I shared together.
For me personally, it made me really rethink about how, as I mentioned earlier, how the things in our past can really affect our lives in unexpected ways, you know, like we and especially in things that we think aren't connected, you know. As I said, I would have never thought a film about free diving, it could have ended up being a film about confronting our past and, you know, and about trauma and like the need to confront them and also the need to let go, you know. I would have never expected that with the film, with how the film started, but it did make me really think about how like there are things that we are afraid of, and if as no matter how long we run from them, we're gonna have to end up eventually having to stop and turn around and face it. You know, you can't run forever. Like there's gonna be a wall and it's gonna be like, yeah, this is it. So the film really did make me think about that. And it also made me think about how brave I think the two of you are. Like I think you're two extraordinary women and you're two extraordinary, incredibly brave and I think inspiring women like Jessie. Like not just about the free diving, but I think about just having the will to do it, especially I mentioned your career before, but I know how intensive like doing PhDs are, and like I just kept thinking, how does she have the time and the will and the mental fortitude and like just doing all of that, but then being able to get back up and say, I'm gonna do this, you know, I'm gonna keep doing it, I'm gonna not gonna let this take away the love of freediving I have. And for For you, Yuki, like I really appreciated that you were so open in the film, you know, and that you were so open with Jesse, and that you both had like the mo there are scenes that are very tense, but I really appreciated that the both of you were so honest with each other, that you really told each other how you felt instead of keeping it inside, because that I think that could have affected your friendship and a relationship, and I think it could have ended badly, like if you hadn't been open. So it really did really remind me to be open with the people in your lives, you know, like don't keep our feelings inside, because if we are open, like that openness can be reciprocated, and that's how healing begins, you know. Healing begins by exposing the wound, you know. And I really appreciate it, and I really appreciate the both of you for making the film and for, I think, highlighting to the world how strong women are, but also how vulnerable women are. And like there is as much bravery in being vulnerable as there is in being strong. And I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Thank
Thank
you
you
so
so
much
much.
for having us.
Yeah.
This was a pleasure. And it also made me really miss the ocean. Like, I miss the beach so much. So much.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, no, I miss the beach. It's been like, what? I haven't been home to Barbados in like 2.5 years now. I'm just like, crap. I'm like, it really did make me miss the ocean and the dolphins and everything. But thank you so much, ladies.
I think I know a freediver from Barbados. And if you
Oh,
ever go back, wanted to connect and get into that.
you do?
I think I
I might,
can
because
connect you to.
I might email you and say, let me know who it is. Because I left home Barbados in like 2009, so I don't think free diving was a thing there. Like mostly it was things like scuba diving and surfing. And I even took surfing lessons. I realized surfing is not for me because I have terrible balance. I have terrible it's and I'm what they call it. I'm like, what, I get up on my opposite leg, which I'm not supposed to because I'm right-handed, but I get up on my left leg, which is weird apparently. But yeah, I might hit you up on that because I do really want to get back into the ocean and like testing my limits again. So thank you so much. Thank
Thank you. Such a pleasure speaking with you.
you too. Like, bye. Have a good day.
Bye, Yuki. See you soon.
Everyone, that was another episode of Caroline Talks, and this was one of my special episodes for the 2024 Hot Docs Documentary Film Festival. I spoke, this was my interview with Yuki Kang about her film Seven Beats Per Minute, about the life experiences, heartbreaks, joys of free diving through the ice of champion free diver Jessie Liu. I appreciate these two women so much. I think they're incredibly brave, and I wish I had this. Like, they're really inspiring to me. Like, when I watched the film and afterwards, I was thinking, wow, Carolyn, you were, no matter how deep into the ocean you go, you really can't like get away from your problems. You know, you can't run from it online. You can't like swim away from it in the ocean. It's gonna come back. Kind of like the shark chasing Ariel in The Little Mermaid. I'm ridiculous for making that analogy. But I appreciate them taking the time to speak with me. And I appreciate everyone who took the time to listen to us. And I hope you enjoy this conversation. Like, it was really insightful. And I got to speak to a champion freediver. Me from 10 years ago would have never thought this was possible, but here I am. You know, I'm just like so happy, incredibly happy. Like, I have the biggest smile on my face right now. But thank you so much for listening to this episode. And you can, of course, find the video version of it on my YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/@Carolyn_Hines. You will find links to this and other interviews on my R3 page. That's my digital portfolio. That's r3.com/Carolyn Hines. Find links to my written work, my op-eds, film reviews, film analysis, you know, written interviews as well, and other podcasts such as Beyond the Romance podcast, my Asian drama podcast channel where I go beyond the romance of Asian dramas. I haven't uploaded episodes in over a year, but you know, I still have like I think pretty great like segments there as well. So take a listen. And you'll find those on Acast as well and other podcast streaming platforms. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. That's at Carrie, CNH12, CARIE, CNH12. You can find interviews for Carolyn Talks using the hashtag Carolyn Talks on Twitter and Instagram as well, and on YouTube. You can type in Carolyn Talks podcast YouTube channel. I have to kind of rebrand it a bit because of SEO, you know, kind of like give it a bit more visibility. And you'll find, of course, other interviews I've done for AFCA, that's the African American Film Critics Association, K Crush, which American Magazine. You'll find them there on the K Crush official YouTube channel, the K Crush Support account on Instagram, and the official K-Crush website is kcrush.com. If you're going to the filmmaker interviews playlist, you'll find all of my interview coverage for my career there as well, and for other Asian-centered film festivals. And until the next episode of Carolyn Talks, everyone, stay safe. Bye.